Yo, what's up, all you slashers and survivor girls? Welcome back to another episode of the Creepin' a Real Horrorcast. I am that good buddy Lunchbox. If you didn't already know by now, you probably should go ask somebody. But that's just unacceptable. I will not tolerate that behavior. So yeah, you need to get that corrected quick. Yeah, do it. Anyways, I'm excited that you guys are here, and this is going to be a little bit of a different episode. I'll tell you that much. For this week, I'm not doing a review. No, we're not doing it. I won't do it. I'll explain a little bit more why. But just to get the perts out of the way, if you end up going out to your emails and you want to happen to get in contact with me, you can always go to creepinitreal.cm@gmail.com. Or you can always go to Instagram or Facebook, and that is @creepinitreal, R-E-E-L. Again, hit me up, drop me a DM, let me know like what next movie you guys want me to do, just to hear me review and ramble on, all that good shit. So yeah, now with this week, as I mentioned, we're not going to be doing a review. If you could hear all that racket in the background, there is a reason for that. So as of this recording, it is July 21st, Friday, which is the day of my birth. That is right. It is my birthday. So I decided that, I wanted to kind of recharge the batteries and, do something a little nice for myself, get myself a little bit of relaxing time. I put in some work. I do some dad stuff. So, you know what? I was like, I brought my family out to the beach and decided that, we're going to have a nice little family beach weekend. Well, as I'm sitting here, I was just kind of like, I can't really do a whole, review. I can't do, a whole edit. Like, it's just going to be a lot of, chaos right now. I was like, I just finished off the franchise. I'm going to do a love letter. That's right. Today, we're going to be talking about my favorite movie of all time, Jaws. And the reason that you're hearing all that racket in the background is because I'm literally standing in the ocean doing this podcast. That is right. This podcast is coming to you from New Smyrna Beach in the fucking ocean. That's right. Hopefully I'm going to have to work on the editing just to kind of make sure that this thing isn't just complete chaos, with all the waves hitting in the background. So yeah, this is going to be an interesting one. As I mentioned, we rounded out the franchise and I was thinking, maybe I could do a retrospective of the franchise, but to be honest, even though Jaws is my favorite film, it's one of those things where this franchise is very easy to break down. It's you have one is great, two is good, three why, and then four is cool god, and it's one of those, like, that's it. That's all you can really say on the matter. It is what it is. And so I was like, okay, well, it's a very short franchise. There's not really much to say about it. And I mean, if you guys want to hear, what we thought about it, I mean, you can always go back into our catalog and, listen to some of those old episodes. So I wanted to kind of go through, and like I said, this is a love letter as to, why and how much I do love this film. And, the question kind of came up when, one of my buddies, we were sitting there, playing Pokemon. And, he was asking, about the podcast. And then he just kind of pulled up that generic question of, what's your favorite movies? Right? And, I instantly, it was almost like a, drop of the hat. It was just like Jaws. And he just kind of was like, well, why? Like, he was a little puzzled because he's like, out of all of the horror movies that I could possibly like Jaws is the one that I was just like, hands down, no questions asked, just Jaws. And I had to like really sit down and think about why this was my absolute favorite all-time movie. And on top of that, the more I thought about it, you know, after finishing this franchise, I was kind of interested to think about why Jaws 1 was just this end-all, be-all goat, whereas, like, let's say 2 wasn't okay, you know, or even 3 was just a meh. Like, why didn't those work when it was literally just dealing with a shark terrorizing a small little community, essentially? And I think it all comes down to it being, it's the scope of what the shark means to the town of Amity. But then I think the film also really only works because of Quentin Hooper. I mean, well, you got, well, Quint, I should say the trio, like, you know, Quint Hooper and Brody. But I mean, it's like without Brody, it's like you don't really have a movie. But it's just one of those things where it's like without those three and without their conflict and without their drive at, you know, for, you know, getting the shark out of the water, there really is no movie. And once you got into 2, it just became a survival movie. There was nothing that was, it was more of like Brody's like, oh shit, I got to deal with this mess again. And then, but there's nobody that can necessarily match what both, you know, Quint and Hooper added to that, you know, to the film. You know, when you compare like almost every single character from number 2, it became more of a teen survival movie at that point. It was just one of those things where, for me personally, it's like, yeah, did the movie necessarily need to happen? No. I mean, you got another shark that just shows up and just starts, you know, kicking ass and taking names, and then turn around and it's just like, now you got a whole group of high schoolers that are, you know, out sailing and the shark is just after them. So it's just, it becomes just a survival movie instead of the hunt. And I think it kind of goes back into that Moby Dick kind of tale where it's, you know, it's Ahab going after the white whale. And I think that's why Jaws is very exciting. And I mean, I do love, you know, Moby Dick. Like, that is it's an incredible story because it's, yeah, I mean, it's a guy that's after a monster, but it's, you know, he's essentially going crazy because he, like, that's all, like, he's just obsessed with just murdering this big ass whale. And with these guys, it's, you know, like, Amity, the town of Amity has now hired these three men to go out and fight, because it's like if they do not kill the shark, like they are going to, the whole town is going to just go belly up. And that is, it's not just one person, it's almost the entire town that will lose its livelihood. And so I love that, and I think that's one reason why this movie works so well for me, is because of just the chase. And I think they tried to do that a little bit with Brody in number 2, where he became this crazed, like, oh my God, it's back again. Like, I'm not dealing with this bullshit and no one's going to believe, you know, no one's believing me. Like, this is crazy. They fire him. And then it's just, it becomes this big to do, but it's one of those, it's the buildup is very much a, for number 2, at least a, yeah, like kind of like a boy cries wolf. And for those kind of stories, they don't really pan out as well. I would suspect, because you kind of already have an idea of like, okay, well, the boy cry wolf. Oh my God, there's a fucking wolf. And it's, you kind of have the idea. And also, it's like, we know that, you know, the shark is there. We know what the shark looks like. I'm actually kind of surprised that it's another 25-footer that's just, you know, fucking going nuts. And it's just one of those things where with Jaws 1, I think the one scene that just locks in just the moment of the three, of the triple, the trio, and how they're going through is that Indianapolis scene where they are sitting there listening to Quint ramble on his story about being on the Indianapolis is just fucking incredible. Like, I every time I watch that scene, I just lock in. Like, he just rips me in and I just cannot tear away. And I've watched that movie so many times that it's just like every time he just starts talking about it, it's just like you just kind of, you know, mouth the phrase. Like, it's just that good of a speech. And it's not only like Quint's delivery of the Indianapolis, you know, speech, but it's also Hooper dealing with, or not dealing with Quint, but actually bonding with Quint for once. Throughout the entire movie, Quint has just been up Hooper's ass, just giving him the business. This whole, I'm blue collar, you're just a rich boy. It's just back and forth between the two of them, and they just clash the entire movie. And to actually see them both just drinking and having a good time and just, you know, showing each other scars, and it's such a buddy moment. And also to actually have Brody just sit there and just kind of be that like guy that is, oh, you know what, okay, finally, like, we're all getting along. Like, he could kind of have like a little bit of a breather there, and he doesn't have to deal with, you know, shoveling chum or learning how to do knots. He can actually like just, you know, unwind a little bit, which is nice. But to actually see these three men bond when this entire movie they have not was really, really cool. And when he starts giving that Indianapolis speech, the face that Hooper is actually giving is the face of the audience. You cannot be torn away. It's that good. And then when the shark was like, you know, he just got tired of the story and decided that, oh, okay, I'm just going to start, you know, tearing into the boat. And then the boys are like, okay, you know, back to work. Again, it's one of those moments where it's so damn good. You have to like kind of shake yourself out of it. And you're like, oh, okay, it's go time. Now, once we get into Quint at the beginning of the film, and he does that whole another, whenever Robert Shaw is on screen, it's like you were just locked the fuck in. But when he's given that whole, you know, I value my, you know, neck for more than just $3,000, the leaders of Amity are just so locked in, and you know, they're all cutting up and having a good time, and then he just instantly just stops the whole goddamn show, and it just becomes the Quint show. And Quint was such a powerful character whenever he got on screen. The first time when, you know, Brody is trying to like kind of talk to Quint, saying, okay, we'll contract you, but, you know, I got to go out there with you. And then, you know, I'm also going to bring Mr. Hooper. And Quint is just making it extremely difficult. but just that interaction between the two of them at the beginning of their essential relationship is, it's one of those relationships where it's like, okay, yeah, clearly this is going to be oil and water. It's not going to work. But at the same time, Brody's like, you know what? I don't really care. Like, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to get the job done. And Quint's just kind of like, all right, like, I don't know if it was more of like, I want to see if Brody will catch my bluff, or I don't know if he was just trying to just play a game of just, you know, making sure that he just had this like macho one up on Hooper or what. I don't know how that dynamic would essentially play out, but at the same time, it worked. It was one of those, like, it worked exactly the way it should have in the film. And it was just one of those things that, not, if you didn't have that conflict, the movie would just fall flat. There wouldn't be any, it's like if they, all three of them were like, yeah, like, oh, we're all buddies and we're all going to do this. It's just kind of like, okay, great. But to sit there and not only, it's like, are we dealing with this killer fish, but we also have to deal with each other. And it's just, there's just, and it's on, they're isolated on a boat in the middle of the ocean. It's, it adds this whole new layer for the story. And on top of that, it's like you have, like, for just the layers of the story, like, there's more than just one layer. I mean, you have the whole, you know, storyline with the town of Amity. If they don't make money, they all basically die. It's one of those type of towns that it's like they thrive on their summer dollars. And if they don't, you know, make the summer dollars, they don't survive the winter. And for this film, it's like having that shark just pull up this threat really adds to that level of like, you know, we got to do something. And then to turn around and have the police chief, who is, seems to be the only one actually that, it's weird because he's like, I don't know what to do, but I'm the only one doing anything. And it's a very hard task to take on, because he is also one of those characters that is literally just being directed. And he's a very strong, like, role model, but at the same time, he's one of those characters where it's like he's being told by the mayor what to do, and he does it. And then he's being told, the coroner tells him, like, oh no, it wasn't a boat accident, I made a mistake, and oh, it's not this. And so then he has to follow that guy, and then all of a sudden now he's got Hooper's telling him, like, oh no, it's not the same shark. We got to go cut this other shark open. And then he goes in and he has to, you know, go and fucking do that shit because Hooper tells him that it's the wrong shark. And then all of a sudden now you got Quint that, like, it's just comes in and tells him, like, oh, well, this is my ship. This is my vessel. You're going to follow me. And then he ends up doing that. And basically Brody becomes, you know, first mate on the fucking ship. And he's given lessons in fucking being a sailor. So he turns around and now Quint is telling Brody how to be a sailor. And it just becomes this thing where Brody is just following orders the whole time. He never takes that initiative as far as like just telling someone to just fuck off and no, we're not doing it. Except for the time when he just says, I'm sorry, Quint, this is my charter. And, you know, this, you know, I'm paying for it. So, you know, it kind of, you know, goes with what I say. That's like the only time Brody ever has a one-up say. And that was, like, the more I thought about it, the more, like, that was kind of interesting. Because it's one of those, like, Brody just seems to be, like, out of all the years that I've loved this movie, Brody was always just that guy that was like, oh no, he's the star, like he's the action guy. But I was just like, he just kind of just gets pushed around, and then the fucking shark shows up and he just gets lucky and blows it the fuck up. It's incredible, but it's just, it's weird. And then I was like, okay, well Quint is the man, but then I was like, but he really just gets eaten. Like, he just says, fuck it. And then all of a sudden, then he gets put in a position where he's like, oh, shit, he's looking in the jaws of death. And then he's like, he's freaking out because he's like, it's his time to go. It's like he gave that whole speech about, oh, I'm never going to put on a life jacket. And I was just waiting for my turn and everything else. I was like, I mean, granted, it's like when you're staring at those big ass jaws, there's nothing, you know, you're going to freak out. But it's like he ended up getting eaten. And then Hooper decided that he was going to try and do something. And it didn't work out. And then he went and ran and hid. Like, he had a Roman Reigns, you know, nighty-night nap, you know. he went and took a siesta. And it was just very, very bizarre to see where it's like, okay, these three men, you know, like, they went in and they failed against this beast. But then one man ended up getting lucky. And then it initially saved the town and saved at least two of the men's lives. And it's one of those moments where you just kind of, it's like in every, you think back on like every other great movie, like let's say like a movie, like let's look back at Aliens, right? When you have Ripley and, you know, and that ragtag of Marines that just got fucking off one by one. It's just like, you kind of see like who's going to be the cannon fodder, you know, when it comes to the aliens. But with this movie, because you only have the three fellas on the boat, you don't really get that opportunity to sit there and go, okay, well, who's the weakest link? Who's going to get off? Because clearly Quint doesn't give a shit about his life. Hooper kind of seems skittish, but it's one of those, like, he's gonna do something and fuck it up for himself. I mean, I've played, you know, hockey with many guys that sit there and just, like, they just rush or they panic, and then they end up, you know, getting checked and their whole night's ruined, right? Like, it's just, they just fuck up their whole day. And Or, I mean, if you look back at, like, you know, Call of Duty players, where they just get over-amped up, or and then they end up getting shy, right? Well, that's kind of how I felt Hooper was going to be, because he wanted to prove Quint wrong and make it to a point where he's like, I'm smart, I know what I'm talking about, this dumb fisherman has no idea what the fuck he's doing. And you could just see where he was just going to just mess up. And I think he almost did. But at the same time, I don't think he was also ready for a 25-foot monster to just come in and just, you know, wreak havoc on that small little shark cage that he had. And it's just, the whole dynamic between the film is really incredible when you actually think about like a lot of those little tiny aspects of it. And I go back to, you know, my buddy that asked me, you know, why is it my favorite? And it's like that is my favorite. It's like it is a movie that just has so many layers when you really sit down and just dissect it. And it's also one of those movies that you don't have to. Like, it's one of those movies that you can just sit there and just watch. And that's something that is very enjoyable for me, is to actually sit down and be able to just either enjoy it or, you know, just give a freaking lesson on it. Like, it's just like one of those things where it's just, there's so much, and it's revolving around a shark, which is my favorite animal of all time. Like, it is, like, how much cooler can that be? So it's just, it's a really, really cool story. And on top of that, on top of all that nonsense that I just got done spewing out, on top of that, not only was it the story that was really cool and the you know, characters that were super interesting, but on top of that, you also had the actual filming of the movie. And that was something that was just incredible, just because nothing worked. They had just a short amount of time to do, just, you know, make a miracle. And Steven Spielberg went in there and just, you know, every time on the over the intercom, the shark is not working. The shark is still not working. And they had to sit there and go, okay, the shark sucks. What are we going to do? And they fucking figured it out. They made some of the best psychological horror to date. Like, I don't, like, there are so many times that I've had a couple people, you know, try to tell me, or they debate with me on whether or not, like, Jaws is scarier than, I don't know, let's say, like, The Exorcist, or a movie like, you know, Evil Dead or something like that. You know, like, something that's got, like, more blood and guts to it. And I had to sit there and go, okay, when you're a kid, how many times have you gone in the ocean after watching Jaws and instantly just started going dun and dun and then freaking yourself out? As like, or how many times have you been in a pool and just thought about the shark being right behind you in the pool and just and you instantly, like, start having a panic attack? Like, it's that, just that music and just the thought of a shark just being out in the middle of the water where you can't see it. You have no idea. Those things just hit so quick and so quietly. It's really, really incredible. But it's just one of those things where, like, just that thought of just being in the ocean and not seeing past that glassy just exterior is some of the most terrifying just thoughts. And having something that is that big and that murderous just coming after you without you knowing it is like, I can't even imagine. And just when I watch back at all those, like, that, it's that one, it's the one scene where it's all the beachgoers and the Kittner boy, right? So it was the Kittner boy. You also had, I think it was like two or three other people that got killed. Or it wasn't people, I should say. It was it was the dog Pippet, which is actually Steven Spielberg's dog. but Pippet ended up getting eaten. And then you also had the Kittner boy. And then there was, I believe there's one more. But it was just one of those things where you watch this shot of this underwater camera moving through just ever so slightly. And all you could see is just these people's feet dangling off. And it's like that shark could have gotten any one of those people. I thought that was kind of cool that the shark didn't just go on this murdering rampage and just started just chomping away at everybody. And because, yeah, they were like moving around, but they weren't like splashing, or there wasn't any type of, like, I guess chaos or like panic in the swimmers. They were just all just kind of just there. And then, and that, you know, going to like the whole aspect of a shark where it's like, oh, they're just going to go after the thing that's panicking there because they think it's a fish freaking out. So the Kinder boy was splashing around and it's like, okay, well, that kind of gives the whole, you know, like what a shark does. That's just, it's there. It's not murdering to murder. And when I think back on all those scenes, like, especially like where the shark is just technically just being a shark, when you go back, there is like Peter Benchley, the guy who wrote the original story, he even said, like, when he wrote it, he meant it to be this, like, oh, the shark is a problem, but it's mainly all the shit that the town is dealing with and what Brody's dealing with. And it's just, that's the real story, not the shark. The shark is just the thing that they have to get around. And when they ended up like making the movie, it became this like, okay, no, that the shark is the focal point of you know, our situation. And then it became a thing where the movie was so popular and it started to villainize sharks, and it became this where you would see, you know, just propaganda on, oh, we got to get rid of sharks, like sharks are so like, it's just, it became this thing of, instead of understanding sharks, it was fearing sharks. And Peter didn't want that. He wanted to have, like, you know, make people understand that, yeah, if you go in this territory, this is, you know, the situation. And if there's, you know, if you're splashing around and panicking, you know, the shark's going to get interested. I mean, you're going to attract them. It's just like, I mean, if you go out in the woods and you see, and you go into a bear's territory and you got a, you know, a jar of peanut butter, that bear is going to just be pretty interested, I tell you what. So I like that Peter Benchley took his source and understood what he was doing with it, and also tried to, I guess, correct it with, you know, being a, you know, with conservation work and things like that. And I also, I dig on that as well, just because it's like, I mean, sharks, I feel, do need to be preserved, and they need to, I mean, they are essential for our ecosystem. And it's, and to sit there and go, oh, they need to be, you know, just murdered and just getting rid of, like, they're, it's just, it's not needed. And movies like Jaws essentially, you know, just put that up, and just, and that became the norm for a very long time. And I kind of feel like most shark movies nowadays tend to either focus on just the great white being the villain, and or making them so massive that it's more of like, oh, okay, it's so unbelievable that, you know, something that big could be, you know, could be out there, type of thing. So it's like, it kind of, you know, you suspend your disbelief, type of thing. And like, I mean, when you look back at like movies like The Meg, right? It's like, okay, yeah, the Megalodon is this insane monster, but it's like, okay, well, how are these guys gonna just stop this, you know, fucking shark? Well, they figure out a way to do it, and I mean, it kind of works on that end. But it's always funny that at some point, in order to kill these big ass sharks, it's always got to be some type of bomb, always got to be some type of grenade, it's got to be some type of explosion that ends these goddamn things. When you got movies like, was it like The Reef, you know, The Shallows and stuff like that, where it makes it a little bit more believable, just because it's not as far-fetched, because it's still a survival movie at its core, but you're dealing with something that's a little bit more manageable. And it's still just acting like an animal. It's a pissed off animal, and it's ready to just go after that one person. But at the same time, it's a little bit, it's more believable. And like, so a movie like The Shallows, I think, is a little bit better. And I'm going to be interested to do that review, you know, in the future. So, I mean, when I sit back and I look back at Jaws 1, everything that goes into the making of the film and the film itself is just an A plus in my book. And I can understand where it might not be somebody else's cup of tea, and it might be slow for somebody else, but it's like, for me, It's like I can every year, every single year, I sit down and I watch Jaws on January 1st at 12, like, you know, at the stroke of midnight. Like, I don't watch the ball drop. I watch Jaws. That is my routine every single year. I don't care what I'm doing. I don't care who I'm with. I'm watching Jaws, like, at the stroke. And every year for my birthday, I watch Jaws. Like, it's gotten to the point now where I've seen the movie so many times that it's like there. I try to just kind of limit myself to those, like, special times to watch them. But it's at the same time, every you know, watchable moment, it's like I'm locked in. Like, I'm enjoying it. I'm happy. I don't care what's going on in my life. I don't care if I got depression or whatever. It's like it takes me out of it, and it just gives me this amount of joy that I just can't, like, it's I can't give that joy back to the creators, just because it's like they, like, I mean, again, it's just a movie, but at the same time, this movie has done so much for me in my life that it's just like, it's one of those, like, you can't thank the people, you know, for making the movie more enough. So for me as a fan, you know, I went through, like, I try to compile some of the different, you know, things in my life that, you know, I kind of came in contact with, and, you know, when it comes to Jaws. And what's funny is, I mean, I live here in Orlando, Florida. And so, you know, ever since I was just a wee lunchbox, I have always gone to Universal Orlando. And lo and behold, yes, you know, Jaws, the ride, was my all-time favorite ride. And sadly, you know, they had to take it down to replace it with Harry Potter. Well, the crazy thing was when we were, you know, they were doing the dismantling of it, and I actually have a photo of me and my buddy Brock. We were actually standing in front of it's the Jaws poster, kind of, you know, paying our respects. And it was really hard because not only were they taking down my favorite ride, but my father was one of the guys that was doing the dismantling. And my dad, right now he owns a civil engineering company, and I end up working. I'm working with him as a little, yeah, AutoCAD technician. You know, just to kind of toot my own horn a little bit. But for, you know, when they were doing the deconstruction, my dad was working for the company that was doing all of the, you know, all the plans and everything, and kind of getting everything set for Harry Potter. And so, but my dad was sworn to secrecy, and he could tell, like, I was really upset because he didn't know that he was working, or he didn't know that I didn't know. And so when I told him that I was upset that they were taking the ride down, he just kind of, like, had to, like, fess up. He's like, oh, I was like, I'm really sorry, but I'm helping on that deconstruction. Well, for 1 year for my birthday, he decided to surprise me. So after everything was said and done, and he was kind of out of the woods from, you know, or because he was like sworn to secrecy, basically, he ended up giving me this big print for my birthday, and he framed it and everything. I actually have it hanging up in my apartment right now, but it's the blueprint of the shark from the ride. It's the mechanics, the everything of what drove that shark, and it's the front and the side view of it. It's the whole blueprint, and it almost makes me cry every time, like, I think about it, just because it's like it's so incredibly special that my dad decided to give me something that was so, like, it was the plan for what was about, you know, was going to be my favorite shark. Like, that was, it was something incredible. And then, like, my dad tells me, he's like, I have all the plans for the, you know, for the ride. He's got all the mechanics. He's got the whole walk, like the track layouts. He's got everything, because in order to deconstruct it, they had to know what they, you know, what they constructed in the first place. So for, like I said, for my birthday, he ended up giving me the plans, which was, but he told me I had to be like still hush hush. So, but it's been a few years, so I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. So that was something really special. And then speaking of the ride, I think one of my favorite, memories from that is I actually got to go on the final tour. It was the last day that they were running the Amity boat tours, and the guy that they had running the tour for us, he just did not give a shit. Like, he... He was so checked out that he was done. And it was probably my absolute favorite ride of all time. So as you, like, you're on the tour, they have to do the whole thing of, okay, we're going to go on and we're going to tell you about, you know, all the stuff that happened in Jaws 1. We're going to talk about, you know, Martin Brody and all the heroics that he went through. And then it becomes the, oh my God, there's like, the boat's gone down, and oh my God, there's a shark, and they do this whole thing of, you know, they like, oh, the guns are loaded, and they like, we're trying to survive from the shark, and they're making it like this big panic, and it's just, it's chaos, right? Well, this guy, he was just like, just so lackluster and just didn't care, and I just loved every moment of it. He was just sitting there, and like the shark show, he's like, oh, it's the big old fish again. Like, all right. Oh, these guns are loaded. All right, here we go. Boom. And he like shoot it on the wrong side of the boat. It was just like, I couldn't tell you how hard, like I couldn't breathe. I was laughing so hard. It was just so goddamn good. And then like when the part happened where the shark cooks itself, like it bites the electrical wire at the end, and then it just, it fries, kind of giving like Jaws 2 vibes. He's like, he pulls out like a stick. He's like, who's got marshmallows? Like, let's have a cookout. Like, this is going to be good. It was so, so goddamn funny. And it was, I kind of wish that's how the tour initially would have gone. Like, it kind of gave me vibes of, what they do over at Disney with the Jungle Cruise, where it is a joke. Like, they're showing you all the Tory stuff, but they're being comedians the whole time. That was probably my all-time favorite ride. And then again, speaking of my favorite ride, one of my friend Brock, he used to work at Universal at the Shrek ride, or Shrek 3D. And his girlfriend at the time used to work on at Jaws. Well, when Jaws was shutting down, she, you know, found out that how much, you know, I was just all about the ride and everything else. And so as a cast member, she was, I guess, like on her way out. And she ended up taking her shirt. Sadly, the shirt doesn't fit me, or I'd be wearing it all the goddamn time. It is so small, but at the same time, it's got the whole Universal code in it. It's got the Amity boat tours. It's absolutely perfect, but it's just really cool that I have that little piece of history with me, alongside with the blueprints. And then on top of just being able to have that opportunity to go almost every weekend when I had, you know, annual passes with my friends and just enjoy the shit out of that goddamn ride. It was so simple, but it was so goddamn good. And I don't know, I love every moment of it. Now, some of the other little items that I have that just bring me so much absolute joy are some of the books that I own that revolve around sharks and Jaws. The biggest one that I think I own that it was so incredible that I found it, but at the same time, the fact that it was made in the first place was hilarious. So we went to, me and Meg, when we were still in and around together, we ended up going, we had this local vintage bookstore, and we went in one day, and I walked back through this one, this like magazine aisle, and I just happened to just, I was flipping through, and I ended up coming across this vintage 1970s magazine that was called, it was like Killer Jaws. And so I was like, okay, cool, like it's a shark magazine, like this is neat. So I picked it up, and it turns out that it is a literal shark propaganda. Like, they are talking about how murderous and everything that I mentioned earlier in the episode. Like, this is what this magazine was built for. Like, every page is just showing just the carnage and just the chaos that a shark can bring. And it is absolutely hilarious. Like, they were showing just how people were being eaten, and you could just see like all just the photos of all these, like, you know, people that were either survived or died from a shark bite. And it's just, it's hilarious. So it was just, that was one of the cooler like pickups. I was like, I had to instantly buy it. Like, there was no way that I couldn't. So that was like something that I have it on my desk, like just sitting there just staring at me the whole time. It's just, it's hilarious. But the other book that I own that is really, really like near and dear to my heart. So one year for Father's Day, Meg and I appreciate her for this greatly. So for Father's Day one year, she ended up buying me the original first printing of Jaws from Peter Benchley. It's like so goddamn cool that I own that book. I was blown away because at first I thought like, oh, maybe it's just a reprint, or because I know that there has been prints that they've done, but no, this was like the original cover, everything. And you know, she ended up picking it up at that vintage book store that we have here in town, and I like, it was one of those like the speechless moments where you just, there are no words. It was a piece of history that I have in my hand, and I had to like, I believe it is a first printing. Like, I've tried to like go through and see if I could find out exactly why, you know, if it is the printing, and everything kind of seems like it is. So it's in good condition. It's just sitting on my bookshelf. Just, it's one of my prized possessions. It's really, really cool. You know, again, I give her, you know, so much credit when it comes to the love of my of dealing with me, dealing with the things that I love. So for years, like, we were married, you know, we are now divorced, but when we were just, you know, kind of where we were still dating at the time, we decided that we were going to go up to Massachusetts, or she used to live out on Cape Cod, and we were going to go out and see some family out there for her. And while we were out there, this is again around my birthday, we decided that we were going to take a trip out to Martha's Vineyard. And so she did everything possible to make sure that my day was just the end all be all, everything that I possibly could have wanted. As a Jaws fan, to sit there and go and visit every single just ounce of those movie locations was incredible. And I know, like, I actually have a couple of buddies that I play Pokemon with who actually lived up in Martha's Vineyard around that time. And it was funny when I mentioned to them, you know, when we were talking about the film, they didn't have the same, I guess, love and respect that I did, you know, walking through those locations, because, you know, they used to see them all the time. So for me to see, you know, to go and see the pond and to go, and I walk through the same store that Brody walked through at the beginning of the film to buy those painting supplies. And like, I went and I bought, it's still a convenience store. I went and bought a bag of chips just to say that I bought something in the same store. And then it was funny because you were supposed to take the ferry over from the Cape to Martha's Vineyard. And what was funny was that we got on the wrong ferry and it took us to the opposite side of the island. Well, we were like, oh, okay, well, we'll just walk over to the right side. Well, it turns out that Martha's Vineyard is really fucking big. There's no way. And so we ended up having to like hop on a bus. And then we ended up renting bicycles. And then we biked around Martha's Vineyard to see all these goddamn locations. And Meg did not stop. She did not complain. She, like, just powered through it and did it every, like, just to make me happy. Which, like I said, that was some, like, it is such an incredible feeling to sit there and go, to look at these locations and just be in awe. And like one of my favorites was the pond. So right where we stood right where Brody was when, you know, he was watching his son being attacked by the shark. And it was funny because right on that bridge where Brody is like running, you know, running down, there's a sign that says no jumping. No jumping in the pond, right? Well, when we got there, there was like 50 kids all lined up on that bridge jumping off of that goddamn thing. And for me to sit there at that spot where Brody was all those years ago and just imagine that shark in that same water and seeing all these kids jumping into that water is just... it was just a really, really cool feeling. And the day before, we went to Newbury Comics, and I bought a Jaws t-shirt, and I wore it at Martha's Vineyard. And it was funny because we were standing on, like, I was in on the beach, standing there in the water where the Kittner boy died. And we had this local walk past us and he saw my shirt and he's like, all right, I know what's going on. He's like, oh, you know what's up. And just that, having that, like, that connection was really, really cool. So, like, that was, it was kind of like when you see, like, another Slayer fan, you see, like, a Slayer shirt. It's like, you have this, like, instant bro. Like, it's, and that's just the way that this guy was with me, but it was just really funny. So it's like having that moment, like sitting there in the water on the beach and then like having the guy like, hey, man, what's up? And so that was probably one of my favorite moments, just to sit there and go, okay, I am here in the spot that I love. And I'm never going to be like, I kind of hope that one day I can go back and see a lot of those locations again, and, you know, and maybe take my kids with me, because that's just, it's an incredible feeling to sit there and see what you love. Like, that's just like, there's nothing better. And as I mentioned, you know, in the last episode where, in Jaws 3, where, you know, I got to, you know, go to SeaWorld and we did the whole tour, you know, at the backstage tour at the shark exhibit, and they still had the sign for the and like from Jaws 3, like where they show the dead body. It's crazy. And I have a picture with me and my son in front of that sign, and it's really, really cool. So like I love having that memory. And that's the thing, is with all this love for this film and really the franchise and a whole. And yes, I'm going to loop in Jaws the Revenge, because if you don't have the good with the bad, you don't have anything to like really round it out. So, I mean, it's weird having your all-time favorite movie and your all-time least favorite movie in the same franchise. But it's one of those things where the amount of love and just enjoyment that I get out of all of these movies is just, like, you can't match it. Like, it's just sitting down and just disconnecting makes everything around you just, it doesn't matter. It's just you were locked into that moment. And having a movie about a shark to do that for me has meant more in my life than most. I mean, there's movies out there that I absolutely adore. I mean, Shaun of the Dead is a huge one for me. American Werewolf in London is great because, you know, the comedy aspect with the, you know, the tortured soul with the werewolf. I mean, The Thing is crazy because of the artistry and just the grossness of the movie. But Jaws is the one that really makes me just feel something like really like just simple terror, but at the same time, just the knowledge of what it took to get me to that level is something incredible, and I will never ever give that up. Like, it is so goddamn good. And like it's just one of those things where it's like I'm always probably gonna mention some type of Jaws reference in some type of movie review, but that is something that I adore. I always adore it. And but that's kind of like where I'm at with that. I mean, there's a few more of the stories, but there's like little guys. I mean, nothing crazy, but like, you know, it'll keep going, and I'm looking forward to collecting more, you know, toys and things like that, and, you know, getting shirts and posters and things like that. I'm a fan at heart, and this is a movie that I'm all about, like buying t-shirts and everything else. So it's gonna continue on. And I know it's like I'm hoping that I can get my kids to understand and enjoy it as much as I do, because it's like, yeah, it's a movie for the whole family. But that's my rant and ramble and love letter to Jaws. It sucks that I'm done with the franchise, but at the same time, it's like it's kind of nice that I don't have to do it anymore. It's cool. That's everything about Jaws for me. So it was really cool being able to do this out here in, you know, God's ocean, and actually see. So again, I hope the waves weren't too noisy for you guys, but it was just really cool to do this here. So, thank you guys for hanging out with me. I'll be back on my bullshit next week with another review. Looking forward to it. So again, always hit me up on the emails at creepingitreal.cm@gmail.com for any, you know, movie review suggestions you guys might have. Also hit me up on Instagram or Facebook at creepingitreal. Also, I got merch, so always make sure to go over to our Instagram bio, click on that Redbubble link in there, and it'll send you right over to the page. All the artwork is done by me, so, I mean, you're helping support the channel, getting the podcast out there, and you're also getting, you know, some pretty awesome artwork, if I do say so myself. So yeah, but that's something that's all for me today. You know, I hope that you guys have a great one. I'm going to go have a great rest of my my birthday weekend, and I'm going to go have me a margarita, I goddamn tell you what. So so yeah. All right, guys. Well, in the words of Quint, farewell and adieu to you, fair Spanish lady. Farewell and adieu, you ladies of Spain. For we receive orders to sail back to Boston. And forevermore shall we see you again.